Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today, I'm here with the lovely Luna.
Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am here.
Yeah.
That's what we got today. So today actually is going to be, a very important topic and also an interesting one that leads into next week's announcements. But we are going to start with psychological safety in tabletop games, which is something that we've touched upon in a lot of other episodes, like character bleed and safety tools and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with a little bit about yourself and what you do in the community, if people don't know.
Sure. Yeah. So a little about me. Most people know me as Gamer Mom Luna pretty much on all the socials. A lot of people would probably remember me from my stream Tales from the Tavern that ran for about 3 years. And currently I am a writer and interviewer with the website shadowmane.com, which is, you can still find Tales from the Tavern interviews over there. So give it a look. It's S-H-A-D-O-M-A-I-N. .com. I am also an interviewer for Rising Tide, which is a Discord community that is working on putting out podcasts for the TTRPG community all around growing your brands and that sort of thing. So I just recently started doing interviews for them as well. So I've got, as of the time of this recording, I've got one under my belt. By the time this releases, I'll probably still have one under my belt, but I have another one coming up very soon. So
March 27th is when this is going out.
Ah, well then I will have another one under my belt by then.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I'll have two out by then.
Go check those. Check all of that out. And all those links will be in the description down below. So whenever I bring somebody on the show, I always am like, what do you want to talk about? What is passionate for you? Because I can't come up with ideas for the life of me. I could bullshit ideas, I guess. But like, if it's something someone's not interested in, what's the point?
True.
So psychological safety, what does that mean to you?
So I should preface this by saying that I went to school to be a social worker. So that's sort of where my background interest in anything related to psychological safety comes from. And then really like, you know, kind of seeing where it can overlap in the TTRPG arena. You know, you mentioned things like character bleed and that sort of thing. Seeing a lot of the overlaps there really kind of made me like, oh, this is something that I think I could really get into. I just recently had a chance to interview Jack Birkenstock Jr., who is the co-founder of the Bodana Group, which is a 501c3 nonprofit based out of Pennsylvania that works around using like TTRPGs and board games in their mental health counseling with primarily teenagers and very young adults. And so there's a lot of, you know, you really have to look at a lot of psychological safety in that regard too, because you're using it in a therapeutic setting. And I could have talked to him for hours about this. Like, yeah. This, like, that was like very much my, like, I was like, oh, I could do this all day.
Fun story. The 1 year anniversary charity stream that was put together within like a month, actually, we donated to the Bodana Group.
Nice. Yeah. They do a lot of really cool stuff. And I had a really great opportunity to have a lengthy conversation with Jack at PAX Unplugged, actually. He was there demoing the game system that they're coming out with. News about that is forthcoming, so I won't step on any toes there. But yeah, he just, like, they do a lot of really cool work around using TTRPGs in, you know, various group settings with teenagers and that kind of thing. Definitely check them out if you get a chance, because they're doing some cool stuff. And I didn't realize this until recently. They actually do a con called Save Against Fear. It's in like the late fall, early winter this coming year. It's going to be early November, he said. Sounds like it's a fairly small event, but I was like, this sounds right up my alley. So if it's in the budget, we're going to try to swing it to go this year. So we thought it might be a cool thing to check out.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I don't have a social worker background. I do have a health administration background. Did nothing for me. But for me, it's most my history with psychological safety is mostly from my own mental health and then like raising a teenager from the foster care system with their own set of things.
Yeah.
But I've used tabletop games, and I've said this before, I've used tabletop games as my escapism basically since I was 16, 15, 16 years old. So I've been playing for 20 years, and it's always been, like, it didn't start as an escapism. It started as, oh, this is interesting. Like, what is this? But then it became an escapism.
Yeah.
At one point, it was a problem. Like, too much. It was a problem. I was playing too many games and, like, just constantly wanting to be away.
Yeah.
So I think that's something to look out for. Don't escape too much.
I think one thing, too, that's just important is that for people who aren't familiar with the term psychological safety, like, you probably have heard it thrown around in the community, but I think it's really important just to identify, like, what does it actually mean? So basically, it's kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's feeling safe psychologically. It's basically the belief that you're not going to be punished or humiliated, I should say, for like speaking up with an idea or a question or making a mistake. It's a really common thing for everybody to want to feel psychologically safe with the people they are with. Like, that's just regardless of whether it's your gaming table or your job or your relationship, you know, or something like that. It's basically, it just allows you to feel included and to learn and to contribute and to grow and not worry about feeling embarrassed or marginalized or like you're going to be punished for whatever it is that you say.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, I mean, I think we all probably, hopefully I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people have experienced what it's like to feel not safe in various settings. And I was never able to pinpoint it. I know I've talked about this story a multitude of times, but the first time I ever tried GMing, I didn't know that that's what it was called because it was years and years and years ago. And I don't think the term psychological safety ever came up in TTRPGs at that point. But I ran a game. It was not a D&D game. I actually was running something in the Dragon Age system. And, you know, I know the Dragon Age lore fairly well, but like GMing is not something that I do a lot of. So this was the first time I had done it. And when we got through the end of the game, and I was nervous enough as it was, but we got through the end of the game and my players basically ripped apart my game. Not like in a constructive way, but like, here's all the things you did wrong. Here's why this part sucked. Here's why. And it just made me like crawl into a hole. And I was like, I am never doing this again. That is not psychologically safe. And it did. It turned me off for like 10, 15 years. I was like, I am never doing this again. And I am just now like starting to tiptoe back into the GM waters. I think I've GM'd two games in the last. And when I say games, they were like short. You know, one was like 3 hours. One was like an hour and a half.
That's fine. Still GMing.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, people need to take into consideration when providing feedback or, you know, just playing a game. And it doesn't necessarily have to do just with feedback. But, you know, you mentioned like safety tools and that kind of thing. That's a way to build psychological safety at your table because you're looking at ways to prevent re-traumatizing someone.
I would like to touch on the feedback part.
Yeah.
So this is actually something that a lot of people have a problem doing, and it's not necessarily because not all the time, not every person has malice intent when they do it. In that particular situation, I feel like there was malice intent a little bit, like in your first one. It just, because that's just like, I don't know how you could not see how this is a problem. Like, some people are blunt naturally. Yes, I get that. But that's still like, I feel like you should know the person and went before you confront them about certain things.
Yeah.
And there's a way to talk to people. And everybody is different. So I have friends. I used to be a quality analyst. I used to be a trainer. I used to work with people and have to tell them, like, hey, you made mistakes. And I had to work with dozens and dozens of different people and how they handled feedback. And I had people who were like, I could literally go up and be like, yo, you fucked up. What the hell? And they would say like, oh, shit, you listened to that one? You weren't supposed to listen to that one. It's like, it was random, dude. And he's like, yeah, I know. What did I get? It's like, you got a zero. And he's like, eh, that sucks. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to get your shit together, dude. He's like, yeah, I know. I'll try. And he's fine. And like, he doesn't hold any ill will towards me because he knows I'm just doing my job.
Right.
But then there's other people who like usually get really good scores. And granted, as someone who is also a perfectionist, I understand this viewpoint, but it was an extreme. They like missed one thing and they got like an 89% on it or something like that.
Yeah.
I had to specifically warn their supervisor that I was going to go talk to them, go talk with them and say, hey, you know, you usually do really, really good on all your calls. You always get 100% and I know you know better. And I don't know what happened this day. Like, it might have just been like a slip up in your mind. Maybe you got distracted by something, but it's okay. People make mistakes. So you did miss saying this portion and here's the recording to prove blah, 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 blah. Because I knew she was going to ask for the recording.
Yeah.
I never forget. I'm like, no, you did. I double checked. It's like, but I know that you sound so professional on the call and you just said everything else about the call was fantastic. And I have to mark off for it, unfortunately. And she would still cry.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, complimenting sandwiching and like pointing out, like, I know all of the, like, this is not normal and I know you have it. But there's just, there's so many different ways to handle people.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because, like, for me, whenever someone offers me criticism, I prefer the methods of, like, understanding but still explaining, like teaching but with understanding.
Yes.
So, like, I got called out recently because I was off my meds for ADHD, mm-hmm. and I was very distracted, very, very distracted from a session zero. And because I was distracted, I missed some stuff in the session zero. And I asked, can we meet tomorrow and finish up making this character? And when we met, the DM was like, I understand why you were distracted. I understand you were following the dopamine. I get that. However, I'm frustrated, not at you, but at the situation.
Right.
And that's understandable. And like, he brought up some points and the points were valid. Like, is this going to be a problem for the actual recording?
Right.
Which is an important question. And I was like, you know, I honestly didn't even realize I was being distracted because I had just recently gotten off my medications. So it wasn't planned. And like, I forgot that I had coping skills that I needed to use in order to actively play and be an active listener in the game. Mm-hmm. And my way of actively listening is by taking notes. Like, if I take notes, I have to listen. So I have to focus on the story. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that Discord notification can wait.
Right.
Even though right now I have one and I really want to go check it.
Yeah.
But like, like, I'm focused. I have to put the blinders on to like look at the situation what I'm working on currently.
Yeah.
But yes, there is positive ways to provide feedback. And I think that's what I like about Stars and Wishes, which came up in the last episode that we did. Stars are like good things that everybody did. And I think somebody should also mention in those. It's usually the players, but I think a player or player should tell the DM what they liked about the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the DM could do more of that. But also wishes is like what they would like to see in the game.
Yes.
So that the DM can know what route you want to go. So if you did a very heavy RP session and they're like, we want more combat, then they know to change that for the future to give you what you want instead of waiting 6 months down the road. Like, why do we never have combat? Oh, my God.
Right. Absolutely. And it's true. And it's funny, too, when you were talking about the feedback examples, going back to that, and you were like, with this one person, I know, like, you mentioned the sandwiching, and I'm like, God, I remember, like, in elementary school, that was how we were taught to give feedback when we were like peer reading somebody else's thing, like give them a positive, then tell them what they should change, and then give them another positive, you know? So yeah, that was all I could think of when you mentioned that. I was like, yeah, definitely know that. And I am also one of those people that, like, there's a way that you can approach people that's like, let me provide you with this feedback, but, you know, they don't sound condescending while doing it. And I really admire those people. You know, I know a few of them who are like really good at explaining things without sounding condescending. My ex-husband is a teacher and he would go into what I would call his teacher voice. And that used to irritate the hell out of me because at that point I was like, you're talking to me like I'm a middle schooler and I don't appreciate that, you know?
Yeah.
But there are people now that I know are like really good at just being like, here's this, you know, or here's how this works, or here's how I would have interpreted this, you know? And just sometimes it's just the simple phrasing of however they say it, you know, I can't give a concrete example right now, but, you know, sometimes just that phrasing of like, hey, this part was really challenging and here's probably how I would have handled it. So, you know, it doesn't say that your way is wrong. It just says, this is how I would have done it. You know, it doesn't make one way right or wrong. It's, we all know everybody does TTRPGs a little differently. So,
yeah, I think the biggest thing when providing feedback and criticism specifically is to ask if they would like it first.
Yes. Yeah.
Because sometimes it's a personal thing. Sometimes it's like they might not be in the right headspace for that type of thing. I know that whenever I DM a game, right after the session, I'm more sensitive to the rejections and my brain automatically goes into that DM low.
Yeah.
And like, I have friends who have played with me for quite some time who will like make sure to, like, they pick up on it, and I haven't asked them to do this, but they'll like say something positive about, like, oh, we had a lot of fun. It was a great game. Like, I really enjoyed this part.
Yeah.
And that helps a little bit. Honestly, though, like, the way that things are worded is such a challenge sometimes. I word things, so I'm not diagnosed with autism, but I took like the the RADS test.
Mm-hmm.
And 130 is like, you probably have this, and I'm at like 126.
Yeah.
when I took the test. So like, I know that I have traits of it and I don't really want to go get an official diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of the things that I do is I will say something and mean exactly what I say sometimes. Like mm-hmm. I know the methodology of like saying things and meaning something different. And I know how to do that as well. But if I'm not thinking, I just will say what I mean exactly. And people are looking for like a hidden meaning behind it.
Yeah.
So there are ways that people will get feedback where it can be misinterpreted as a different method. And for me, I will always just say, hey, can I clarify exactly what you mean?
Yeah.
That's what I started to do instead. I used to just get upset. Like I used to assume what was being said.
Right.
And when I would instantly start typing. And then before I responded, whenever I was angry, I would delete it before mm-hmm. I responded. And then I would reread it and calm down a little bit and then ask a clarifying question.
Yep. Yeah.
So like it's actually happened on a specific site that I'm on. I won't mention the site name, but I had posted something and a guy responded saying, why is it okay for like basically why are men considered assholes? But when women do it, it's okay. Like it's not fair. Like it was worded in a way that immediately put my defenses up.
Right.
Just because of it was coming from a man and like it was also like saying, well, why do I get called an asshole when I do blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I wrote out a long response and yeah. I just deleted all of it. And I was like, can you please clarify what you mean by a little bit of attitude?
Yeah.
Before I respond.
Yeah.
And he clarified and then he's admitted he didn't have a real example. And I'm like, well, without an example, I cannot answer why you were called an asshole in this particular situation. I can say that women are usually defensive because they have been hurt by men. And when you come up to them and are being more sarcastic or jokey and they don't know you very well, they are going to go on the more defensive side of things automatically a lot of times and assume, sadly, the worst of the situation yeah. until proven otherwise.
Yeah.
And that's very true because I've had that happen with friends that when I didn't know it was my friend, I'm like, this is really fucking rude. What the fuck? And then I realized it was my friend and I'm like, oh no, it's just that guy. It's fine. Everything's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
Like, and because I could suddenly hear the tone again and like knew where it was coming from. And suddenly right. I was like, oh no, okay. I know how this person talks.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like miscommunication is a huge thing. And honestly, if you think that someone's saying something, try to ask.
Yeah. I think that's a huge piece of it is being open to like if somebody asks a question like, can you tell me more about that? Tell me what you mean by that. You know, that sort of thing. Like that in and of itself usually isn't intended to be an offensive question, both mm-hmm. offensive or offensive. It's generally because we're trying to get more information out of something. I think that people, when you're sitting at a table for a TTRPG, I think you have to remember that people need to be open to the fact that there are going to be people different than them at the table. Not everybody is going to respond to every situation the same way. And so that's part of it. You know, I know that me personally, I play at a lot of tables with people that I have never played with before and may not play with again, just because I do a lot of one shots and charity streams and that kind of thing. So not because I don't like these people that I play with, but we all have crazy hectic schedules. So, yeah. You know, it may just be that schedules allow me to play with certain people a lot and not with others. And so I have to be able to sit at a table and look at everybody around me, figuratively speaking, and be able to feel that like I can say, you know, hold up, this the way this story is going doesn't feel right to me. It feels uncomfortable to me. I mean, there's sadly umpteen million scenarios in the TTRPG space where even in actual plays that I can think of one prime example a few years ago where a story went south. The DM did something with a character that really made everybody at the table, especially that player, very uncomfortable, but nobody knew how to respond to it. And so I think it's really, really important to be able to stop those conversations, you know, find a safety tool that works for your table and stick with it and make sure everybody knows how to use it and that they're not going to feel bad for using it.
And also like respond to it. Like when we have X-carded yeah. in streams, we've paused and we're yeah. like, hey, we'll be right back, everybody. Give mm-hmm. us 10 minutes. We'll be back in a minute. And like immediately shuts off, even if it's in the middle of the conversation, shuts down, gets offline and has a conversation to make sure that person's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't get pulled often, but when it does,
yeah,
like it's for a very important reason.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, the X card is one that's really a nice, easy one to use, especially if you're streaming or podcasting, because it's just like, we need to stop, like, take this story somewhere else, you know. But there's also like the Monty Cook's Consent in Gaming resource, which is great just for like getting started, getting to know your players a little bit. If you're, you know, if you're like, okay, where does everybody feel, you know, that's more of the lines and veils and fade to blacks versus what is, you know, what do we just want to avoid completely? And, you know, and that's, I mean, like I said, that's a free resource. It's available online. You just do a Google search, Monty Cook's Consent in Gaming, and boom, you'll find it.
I do like the traffic light options as well.
Yes. Yep. The traffic light options are great. I took recently, I ran a Monster of the Week game, and that there was going to be things in it that like, or there were things that like we would never touch on because I, as a human, didn't feel like I wouldn't be able to run a game with these things in it. But I can't remember. I don't even know what it's called. But somewhere I got my hands on, it's like a Google sheet that's like a lines and veils kind of thing, but it's a collaborative one. So basically I send it out to my entire team or my entire table, and, you know, it lists out, you know, bug, blood, you know, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And if I go in and check off and say bugs are yellow, so like they're okay as long as that we don't actually deal with them face to face. Blood's fine, you know, body horror's fine, but I don't like spider, you know, things like that. And then you go in and you're like, nope, actually, I don't like blood. I'm going to make that. That's a big, like, we just not, no blood at all whatsoever anywhere. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's going to be really hard to do if there's combat in a game, but you don't have to describe it. It's okay. But as soon as somebody makes something, like if I make something green and then somebody else goes in and makes that yellow or red, somebody else can't go in and then make it green again. So the minute it becomes a yellow or a red, it can only go down. It can't go up again.
And a veil can become a line, but a line cannot become a veil.
Exactly. So I actually took that one and Monty Cook's Consent in Gaming and kind of mushed them together. And then I just went through and I added in another column that was just like not relevant for this game. And, you know, checked off all the stuff that I knew was not going to be relevant in that game. Like I knew we weren't going to have anything happen to, you know, like kid or whatever, because I had complete control over that. So I could say that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you play with a group for a long time, you start to be like, oh, yeah, I know what they're comfortable with and I know what they're not comfortable with. But like, do you, though? You know, people have stuff in their everyday life that they don't always tell you about, and they don't have to tell you why spiders aren't OK. You just have to know they're not, you know, and that's it.
So like there was one time I accidentally forgot someone's line. It was a veil, I think, but not a line. I don't remember. But they had we'll say it was a line, but they had a line of rats. They didn't want rats in the thing. And I was explaining a hoarder's home and not thinking straight. And like my brain immediately went to, what does a hoarder's home look like?
Right.
And in a hoarder's home, you usually see like rat poop and things like that. And you see like, and like, that's what I described. I didn't describe the rats themselves.
Yeah.
Or I think I might have said like one scurried across the counter and it disappeared. And then I was reminded it was a line and I was like, shit, right, sorry. And immediately like stopped talking about it. For me, one of my biggest lines has always been dolls, because I have a phobia of dolls. And you would think that wouldn't come up that often. And like in most games, it doesn't. There was one particular person that I played with, though, who kept forgetting.
Mm.
And like the first or second time, it's one thing. Like, I get it. Especially if it's like a long time in between playing with somebody. But like the ninth time, it's like, now it's just like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Like it got to the point where other people at the table were X-carding for me.
Oh.
Because they're like, dude, stop. Why? Why are you doing this? You know, this is a no. And it made me not want to play at the table anymore, honestly, because I wasn't like, I got to the point where I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to be triggered today.
Yeah.
But then there's stuff that like, there was a thing that like triggered me that I didn't know was a trigger, because it wasn't on the line and veils list for me. And I realized as I had the words come out of my mouth, as soon as it hit what I said, I was like, I'm not okay right now. And I waited for a sec. I said, hey, I need a couple minutes. I typed it in Discord. Need a couple minutes. Turned off my camera. Calm down.
Yeah.
And then typed in like, when we're on break, I have a new line.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'm calming down.
Yeah.
Just I'll let you know what it is then. Because I knew this subject wasn't going to come up again.
Yeah.
In between.
Yep.
And it never came up again in the story. And that's how it should be.
Yes.
Like sometimes that's harder when it's like basically there are games where people aren't meant, like there are going to be games that aren't meant for you if that's not your cup of tea.
Yep.
So like if you don't like guns, for example, don't play in a Revolutionary War game that is going to have guns only as your weapons.
Yeah. Well, like something like a horror game, for example, you're probably not going to want to play Call of Cthulhu.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. If you don't like horror, don't play scary games because they can get very dark. Like there are some scarier games that aren't too scary.
Yeah.
There are games that can go very, very far, which was actually like, it was interesting the first time I ever had to use a green card, actually, because it was like, I've used it a couple of times, but it was basically in situations where the characters were screaming at each other and arguing very intensely. I was one of them. It was another person and we were sisters and we were arguing. And like in the Discord, we're like, are y'all okay? And it's like, yeah, no, we're good. Like,
yeah.
Because beforehand we said like, hey, sorry for whatever my character's about to say.
Yeah, I had a character like that. I played in a game several years ago, and her whole demeanor in this game was, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know, like, why was I selected to be part of this group? You know, because it was a Savage Worlds World of Darkness crossover, and my character happened to be a vampire in a party full of vampires. I mean, my character happened to be a werewolf in a party full of vampires. And so she's like, the hell am I doing here? Like, seriously. And so I would always have to start and end each session with, I'm fine. I'm not mad at you guys. This has nothing to do with you. Claudia's just a bitch tonight. You know, like that was just kind of how it was. And then, you know, I would check in with everybody at the end and be like, hey, are we all good? Like, you know, usually part of it was because that game, we streamed it on Monday nights, and Mondays are usually my most stressful day at work. And so it's very easy for me to like channel a lot of that like irritation and that sort of thing into a character like that. Doing it on a Monday night just gave me a place to sort of channel that energy. And so I would, you know, I'd have to check in with people afterwards and just be like, hey, just so you know, I'm not mad at you. Hopefully you're not mad at me. Like Claudia just didn't really know what to do with, you know, this situation and that kind of thing. And people usually were fine with it. But I think it's really important. You know, you don't have to do it. I mean, I think it's helpful if you do, but go around when you're sitting down at the table and you're doing a, like, do a check-in before you get started, because it's good to kind of get the vibe of where your table is at. You know, like that way, you know, if somebody at your table had a bad day or somebody's like just feeling kind of quiet and pensive and maybe they don't want to talk a lot today, but they still want to be present for the game. Like they want to participate, but maybe they're not going to say a lot. It's good to get that sense ahead of time. And then maybe at the end of the session, like you were talking about before, the stars and wishes, like, hey, what went really well for everybody this time? And hey, what do you wish we did a little differently, or that kind of thing? And I think it's important also for players to get that from their GM. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the GM the responsibility is always put on the GM to go around and do that for all the players. But we have to remember the players need to do that for the GM too.
Yeah. And I think players should do it for the other players too. I like to do that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what was your favorite moment of this game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes it's the GM. Sometimes it's the player. They're like, I did that in one of my games where there's like one time someone's like, honestly, the gifts you were sending, that was fucking hilarious. Like, I loved it because they were like, somebody was sending gifts during the intense scene or something.
Yep.
And that always made people laugh. Another thing I like to do, particularly online games, which all my games currently are online.
Yeah,
I had one local game, but I'm not in it currently, so everything is online. I, as a GM or as a player, will message a player to ask questions and like clarify things or check in or ask permission to do something and make sure they're okay with it. And I like DMing that way.
Yeah.
Because from the outside perspective, it doesn't look like you're doing anything. So like the story doesn't get interrupted and the story feels like a complete thing.
Yeah.
But you know that they're okay with it. So like there was a situation where like I knew this character would be okay with it because they like literally have told me like, you can kill my character if you want to, like do whatever you want as long as it's cool. And I ended up using a succubus on her.
Mm-hmm.
And the succubus charmed her into coming towards her.
Yeah.
She walked over. And then the succubus kissed her when the players would not leave and drained her almost completely down to 5 health.
Oh, wow.
Like it was this close to dying. And the way that the kiss works is your health is at 5 until you rest. Like it's at that, in D&D 5e at least.
Yeah.
It's at that level until you rest again. So she is completely drained. The succubus is healed. And the party immediately went into fight mode and attacked at that point. But out of character, one of the players interrupted the game and is like, are you okay? And I'm like, please trust that I've already checked in.
Yeah.
Like, I understand.
Yeah.
Like a message would have been okay. Like if they message in Discord, hey, are you good? Is that, are you, do you feel safe? Like, yada, yada. That would have been fine. But interrupting the session for it, when it's not, like if they don't do the X card specifically or like red or anything like that, that's where I'm like, can we not?
Like, yeah.
I have been checking in with all of you throughout this entire game to make sure this is okay. We have secret meetings. All of us have secret rooms. Everybody can do things like, and I did that with like NPCs when I played an NPC girlfriend of a character.
Yeah.
And we were waiting for the first kiss scene. And I was like, do you want the first kiss scene to be today? No. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Then trust me on this one. And then like they almost kiss and like I make it super dramatic and then something happens. And yeah, like amp up the like potential. It's like, oh, you're sitting, it's this beautiful starry night, the light, there's only candlelight up here and it flickering and a glow, and she leans in and then you hear, are those footsteps on the roof? Are those ninjas? No, they're assassins. Oh, you should run.
Yeah. Oops.
Oops, all assassins.
We sort of started to touch on it before, but I think it's important to note too that like not every game is for every player. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to know that. And it's important to know that you may really want to play with a particular GM. They may not be running a game that you're going to be comfortable with. And you need to be okay with that. Like you need to, and not by be okay with that, I mean, you need to be okay with not playing that, not like make yourself uncomfortable and sit through it, you know, because you're going to have a terrible time and you're probably going to make it a terrible time for everybody else, whether you think you are or not. You know, people pick up on that stuff pretty easily. You know, if you're not having fun, odds are you're probably bringing the mood down at the table without even realizing. So it's okay to say this is not a game for me. Or even if you start a game, it's okay to be like, this is not what I signed up for, or this is not what I expected. Mm-hmm. Have a conversation with your DM, have a conversation with the other players, and just let them know like, hey, I hope you guys have fun. I'm really sorry. This is not the right setting for me. You know, it's okay to be honest about it.
There have been games that I've played. I played a ton of one-shots on Beholder to No One. And there were a couple that I've played that I'm like, I don't think I'll ever play this one again.
Yeah.
And like, I just wasn't my cup of tea. And like, when I first heard it, like, I'm willing to try almost any game.
Yep. Once. Yeah.
Even horror games. Like, I tried Cult, and that was terrifying and very dark and very gruesome and gory. Way more gory than I'm used to.
Yeah.
But we were making sure to check in with each other at all times and making sure everything was okay, everybody was okay. I've played in games from all over the board, from extremely intense to, like, all the bad things can happen. And, like, all of the bad things, minus what your lines are.
Yeah.
And those are, like, fade to black, usually. Or I've played in games where it's all cheerful and happy and everything is just meant to be silly and fun.
Yeah.
And I like both sides of the coin, depending mm-hmm. on the game and the DM and the story.
Yeah.
I like consequences in my games. I like narrative consequences in the game. Sometimes there are extremes.
Yeah.
And I might not agree to those, but if I'm told, hey, this world is dark and this is how it is, when I'm walking into the story, I know to prepare for that.
Yeah.
And we also know not to go into particular details about particular things. So, like, there was a time where a character had something terrible happen to them, which is a trigger for me.
Yeah.
But it was, like, a fade to black situation. Like, we knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this character is dead to me now. Like,
yeah,
they're gone. They are no longer alive. And one of the players was like, I'm going to go rescue her. I'm like, no, don't go rescue her. And he's like, no, I have to go rescue her. I'm like, I don't think you understand. I am not RPing the psychological trauma that she just went through.
Yeah.
Like, I am not RPing that. So she is a dead character to me. I am bringing in a new character now. Like, I'm okay with what happened. Like, I'm not okay with it, but, like, I'm...
Right.
I'm okay, technically, with what happened to the character. And that was part of the story, and that happens. I'm moving on. And sometimes that's how it has to be, honestly. And if that's not something you can do, then don't play. You would know not to play in those particular games. There are particular GMs that I won't sit at their tables anymore because I just don't like their style necessarily.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not always because it's like doesn't feel safe. It's because one was because they blamed my character's success for other people's failures.
Yeah.
And that pissed me off so bad. It's like, oh, well, the next two things failed because you cast ice on everybody to make them shielded and protected. And I'm like, the fuck? I wouldn't put their bottom of their shoes icy. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And they're, oh, you slipped because of the ice shield. And I'm like, no. What? Why are you blaming me succeeding on their failure? make it something else. Because then it looks bad on me and like the characters don't like me because I use magic or whatever.
Yeah.
Another thing about psychological safety, I think, is more leaning on the mental health side of the aspect of it. And it's a outside of the tabletop. Well, it's an inside tabletops, but it's knowing when to stop.
Yeah.
When to pull away from a game, when to pull away, like you mentioned earlier, when to pull away from a show, when to pull away from anything. And even if it hurts to do so.
Yeah. It's hard. And it's hard because, like, if you're anything like me, you don't want to do it. Like, you don't want to step away because you don't want to upset somebody. You don't want to, you know, hurt somebody's feelings. You don't want them to be mad at you. You know, like, these are all the things that have gone through my head when I've had to walk away from a project. And it's like, every single time I'm like, they're going to hate me. They're never going to talk to me again. They're never going to, like, I'm never going to get invited to sit at a table with these people again, you know? And it's like, 90% of the time, they're like, not even 99% of the time, they're like, yeah, no, totally get it. Like, life gets in the way, whatever, you know. Yeah. And generally, people are cool with it. But, you know, obviously, you want to not be a jerk about how you make your exit. So I think if you let people know, like, you don't have to tell everybody, like, this is the nitty gritty of what's going on in my life right now. Like, you can just say, like, hey, this isn't for me, or this isn't, you know, the right game for me. Or like you mentioned, you know, needing to step away from projects. I stepped away from a 3-year stream in October because I knew I just didn't have the energy to put into the quality that I wanted that show to be, you know? And I realized, I was actually just having this conversation with someone the other day. I realized when I did it, I didn't notice until I wasn't doing it anymore how much of my energy it was sucking up. Like, it's a lot, you know? Yep. For anybody who isn't familiar with Tales from the Tavern, it was 5 guests plus me every week for 2 hours in a live stream, never fully knowing what to expect, maybe having a guest call out at the last minute, maybe having moderators who, most of the time, I will preface this by saying my moderators were fantastic. And most of the time, like, never had an issue with not having a moderator show up. But again, like, they're human too. You know, life gets in the way for them and somebody can't get home because they're out with a family member or whatever. Like, it was so energy consuming, not just time consuming, but energy consuming.
And then you also have to, like, I know that there were times where you had people on the show that when I was watching that just took the stage a lot.
Yeah.
And like talked and talked and talked and talked. I'm like, hey, there's 5 other people that need to talk. Please stop. Yeah. But like, you can't say that either. Like, you don't want to be rude, but you like also need to be like, oh, well, I'm interested in hearing about what this person has to say.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. And I think maybe only I can think of 2 times that I would have that I had a guest on and the rest of the party would the rest of the guests would be like, yeah, no, if they want to talk, absolutely let them. Because like, I don't want to name drop, but they were pretty big name guests in the gaming community, you know? Mm-hmm. And so people were like, no, we want to hear, like, the other guests were like, we want to hear what they have to say too, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was really the only time that it was acceptable. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a lot too. I mean, especially if you're like, and I know you're going to relate to this, but if you're the creator and the producer and the editor and the person who does all the public, like, holy crap, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's, I know that, like, I stepped away from a game that I was in for almost 3 years or 3.5 years. We played from level like 3 to 13, 14, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And I loved the game. I loved the characters. I loved the story. I didn't like the DM, and I slowly didn't like them more and more as time progressed.
Yeah.
Mostly because of personal opinions that I won't go into, but like just things that they stated or ways that they handled situations or ways that they didn't deal with their spouse and his issues. But like eventually, like I talked about leaving for 6 months with one of the other players. Like I'm like, I don't want to leave because I love the characters and I love the story, but like I'm also like frustrated with this and I like dread coming to the game, but I love playing this character.
Yeah.
So finally, I decided, like, I'm just going to step down. And I, truthfully, truth be told, I did sign up for another game. So I had a 9 o'clock game suddenly on Friday nights. And we moved the game earlier so I could play. But it was like, I played from 7 to 9 and then I played from 9 to 12.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was so rushed and crunched. And I finally was just like, okay, this isn't worth it for me anymore.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, I need to step away. I know we are wrapping up towards the end of the story. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long that's going to take. And I don't know if I can provide you that time. But when you get to the final boss battle, when you find Rochelle, when you get to her and we are there to kick her ass and save the day, please message me.
Yeah.
So my character can get some closure.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see the story end.
Yeah.
Because I watched this character grow and I would love to see the story get completed. And they did. They did message me. It was very rushed, unfortunately, because I had, like, again, I had a time limit. But we got to defeat the bad guy at the end.
Yeah.
And save the day, save Eberron, save the world.
Yeah.
Basically, she was trying to release, what the fuck is the name? God damn it. So Eberron consumed something, a person, a guy, mm-hmm. a dude who was in the center of the earth, basically.
Yeah.
Can't remember his name off the top of my head. I'm going to remember it as soon as we're done recording. Hold on. Eberron 8. Okay, I can't find it. My Google is failing me. I'm going to get messaged by my friend the second he listens to this episode and, like, message me and say it was this person and be like, God damn it.
You're God right, damn it.
But anyway, so the whole point was in that story, she was trying to release the creature that's in the center of Eberron planet, which was created to trap this person. And if that person was released, then it would destroy the entire planet. So, like, they were all siblings, and, like, one sacrificed himself or herself to imprison the other.
Yeah. I actually wrote a blog post about this back in, I don't know, sometime in the summer of last year, basically talking about, like, not taking on more than you can handle, and, like, how it's so easy to get pulled in a multitude of directions once you start, like, getting in the depths of the TTRPG space. Like, you know, it's one thing, like, sure, like, you want to interact with people on Twitter and that's fine. But, like, if you start getting into, oh, I want to be in this one shot and I want to be in this one shot, I want to be in that charity game and I want to create a podcast and I want to start a Patreon and then I need to monetize my podcast and, you know, all of that stuff. It's like, you really need to think about how much time and effort is going to go into all of that and decide whether or not it's worth it for you to continue on with it. Like, there's a series of questions that I like to ask myself when I'm looking at a project and, you know, like, or if somebody wants to invite me to interviews are a little less so, but, like, if I'm going to commit to a one shot, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, we're going to do a charity one shot, it's on this day from this time, this is the charity, you know, all of this other stuff, I won't say, like, yep, my calendar's free, like, let's go ahead and do it. Cause I really will, like, put myself through, like, this series of questions in my head. Like, it's not like I sit down and write it all out, but, like, you know, is this a charity that I personally would want to support? If not, this is already not the project. You know, does this work for my schedule? You know, is there a possibility? So I have a teenage daughter myself and she has a part-time job. So, like, is there a possibility she could get scheduled to work that day? And if so, will her work schedule conflict with when we're recording? Because if that's the case, then I might have to leave early to go get her if I can't find someone to help, like, with transportation that day. If I have something else going on that day, is there enough of a buffer between the two projects? And, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Am I going to have enough spoons to do the thing that I'm already committed to that day?
It's Kyber, by the way.
What's that?
Kyber is who it is. That is the name that I could not remember.
All right. I have literally made plans with my kiddo before and been like, okay, we can do that as soon as this one shot that I'm streaming on Twitch is over with. And then the session runs long. And, like, in this particular case, it ran not like 10 minutes or 20 minutes. It ran hour long. And at that point, I literally had to say on stream, I don't have time to finish this game. I made a commitment and I need to honor it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was really uncomfortable for me. I hate that kind of thing. Actually, that question just came up on Twitter not too long ago. Like, somebody had posted a, like, you know, something to the effect of, you know, how do you handle it if a game runs long? And I've always, for me, if a game's like 10 minutes over, yeah, that's usually okay. But if we're like an hour short, like, if we're looking like we're still at least an hour out of where we're supposed to be, I get really uncomfortable really fast because a lot of times I feel like I can't back out at that point. You know?
Yeah, I know that there have been games. The first season I was on a stream, the games were quoted to be 3 hours, but there was days where it would go up to 5 hours.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I can't keep doing this. Like, I want to play. Don't get me wrong. But like, if you say it's from this time to this time, I'm going to go with that. That's what the times are.
Yeah.
And like between like, so I used to be in 2 Friday games. Well, technically at the one point I was in 3 Friday games. So I was in 3:30 to 6:30, then 7 to 9, and then 9 to 12. So that 30-minute window right there,
yeah,
that was all I had to eat dinner on that on that Friday. So I'm like, I need to go. I need to go eat food, or else I'm not going to be. Like, thankfully, the 7 to 9 game was, like, not streamed, but the other two were streamed. So I'm like, I need to go feed myself, please. Like, I need to leave.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to our conversation around psychological safety too. Like, you have to be able to feel comfortable enough with your DM to say, like, I can't continue on in this way. Like, either we need to get a handle on the schedule, or we need to look at are all of our recording sessions actually going to say 5 hours? And then if we record for 3, yay. You know, like,
yeah,
that's all part of it. Like, you have to be able to have those conversations with your, you know, your fellow players and your DM. And if you're a DM and you say our game is going to end at 10, it's kind of on you to make sure that the players, like, are moving in a direction that game is going to end at 10 or close to it.
I know that, like, this past Saturday we had a Vampire the Masquerade game, and we did go over by 30 minutes, but we went over for a good reason.
Yeah.
We were in the middle of, like, a very serious discussion, and my character, the last thing that she rolled was a bestial failure, and she snapped.
Yeah.
And so we role-played that out, and it took about 20 minutes to role-play that out because it was, like, a huge, intense moment. And my character is a Malkavian who is very shy and, like, not shy. She's very truthful and understanding, and, like, very always wants to be the one that helps people and, like, doesn't question what they do. So when she bestial failed, it finally snapped at her. She snapped at this Toreador who she had found out was, like, wanting to protect her.
Yeah.
But actually she just wanted her for herself.
Oh.
Is what she was told. And, like, basically the Camarilla and the Toreadors, they will take things that make pretty things and keep them for themselves.
Yeah.
Because they like the pretty things. And my character didn't want that. Yeah. So my character has been working for 3 weeks really hard on all these paintings. She has been stressing herself out, working nonstop. And the thing that she said that made her, like, snap, and it was literally, I was rolling to see if she believed the lie we just convinced her of. We did so good on that roll, and then I fucked it up. She was saying, it's exactly like I envisioned it. My ideas are coming to life. And my character is like, my idea. And then she's a Malkavian, so she had a delusion where the glass behind the woman shattered and colors were everywhere in the world around her, because she has synesthesia, so and hallucinations. So the world shattered around her. It's super colorful, and in the center is this one woman who's wearing a solid white power suit, basically, because this is based in the 80s, and just looks boring and drab. And my character goes the fuck off on her.
Oh no.
And my character doesn't curse usually unless her beast is in charge.
Yeah.
So when she got very hungry, she cursed. And then this was the second time she cursed in, like, the game. And she literally told the lady, like, the world is a beautiful, colorful place, and you are boring and white except for your aura, which are ugly hues of red and orange, which to her means, like, anger and greed.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't say the emotions out loud. She says the colors of the emotion because that's how she knows them. And the lady's like, I'm trying to save you from these delinquents. And she's like, those delinquents are my friends.
Yeah.
And just, like, goes the fuck off on her. We now have an enemy. My bad. I wasn't the sole responsible party, but my bad. But it was intense and fun, and, like, it was a great ending to that arc of sorts.
Yeah.
And after we finished and they left, we're like, okay, we're 30 minutes over. We'll take care of the rest of this after, like, next game. But cutting it in the middle of that would have been, like, really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And lose the momentum.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
So earlier you mentioned knowing when to walk away from a project.
Yeah.
And I feel that so hard. I feel that so hard. So Beholder to No One has been running for 3 years as well. 3 years and 3 months, actually.
Yeah.
Or this will be 3 years, the third month. And I have lost the passion for it. It's not there anymore. The show isn't doing as well as it was. I don't put the energy into it as much as I have because, like you said, you're doing literally everything by yourself. The only help I get is Matt does edit, which I appreciate Matt forever for editing because that helps so much. But when you're doing literally everything else, the planning, the scheduling, the social media, the trying to get new people, the pushing it, and none of it helps get more listeners, it gets very frustrating.
Yeah.
And after going through an extreme burnout at the end of last year, I'm realizing how much more precious my time is.
Yeah.
So I have all these ideas that I want to do, and I'm working a full-time job again, and I can't do them because I'm committing to things that I've been forcing myself to continue because I've been doing them for so long.
Yeah.
So this is the last episode of Beholder to No One. I'm going to do a goodbye episode. So second to last, technically, but the last discussion episode, we'll do tell you what's happening once I know what the fuck is happening, because I don't know 100% yet what's going to happen. Like, I'm not quitting podcasting. I'm not quitting streaming. I'm not quitting tabletop community. I'm still going to be here. Just, it's time to close these doors.
Yeah.
Just like you had to step away from, you still do the one episode, but you had to step away from Tales from the Tavern.
Yeah.
And then you realize what a relief it took off of you. And I realized that when I took my 2 month hiatus.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck.
Yep.
And when I didn't feel guilty that I missed 3 episodes in a row, I knew suddenly, okay, it's not there anymore.
It's time. Yeah.
So I finally, I decided to complete the episodes that I agreed upon, because I had technically planned out through June, but I've only reached out till mid-March, and then I missed 2 weeks. So it got pushed ahead. So I finished all the episodes that I agreed upon, and I reached out to people. And that's why I wanted to finish this episode, even though we had to reschedule, because I was like, we agreed to it. I wanted to talk to you. We talked on your show. It's like, let's not talk on my show. And it's just, I think it'll be great, because I can then step back, leave up all this as archived. People can still listen to all the episodes, all 260 something episodes. And I can go work on some things that I've been wanting to work on for a while.
Yeah.
Like cool new stories that I'm very excited for, that I won't be working on by myself.
Yes.
Which is the biggest key here. It is working with a team of people. And that is what I need, because I can't keep taking on tasks that I am the sole responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot.
It is. It really is. So for your own mental health and psychological health, if something is too much for you, know when it's okay to step back. Even if the brain gremlins inside are saying you're doing a terrible thing and how could you give up on this and all of the screaming at me right now. You just need to know when to stop and move on to the next thing.
Not a terrible thing to take care of yourself.
Nope, definitely not a terrible thing to take care of your mental health and well-being. And go to therapy. Everybody should go to therapy.
Whether you think you need it or not.
Even though it sucks. Therapy sucks, but go to therapy. I hate therapy, but I love therapy at the same time. Anyway, that's the lesson of the day. Go to therapy. So on that note, would you like to add any other social media places that you can be found?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, like I mentioned at the start, I can be found as @GamerMomLuna on pretty much all social media, Twitter, Instagram. I am @GamerMomLuna @DiceCamp on Mastodon if you're over there. I am @GamerMomLuna on YouTube. You can find the whole backlog, almost the whole backlog of Tales from the Tavern, including the new... I say monthly, but they're not entirely it might be late March and then early April when we release something. So it's not quite on a schedule, but we've got some really cool videos. Let's see, by the time this releases, we will have released an interview with Red Wormling, the 6-year-old DM, which was a ton of fun. And that comes complete with original illustrations for each answer he provided. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Definitely worth checking that one out on YouTube. So I highly recommend that one. And it's very short. It's only a 4-minute video. So yeah, definitely worth the uh, definitely worth the 4 minutes for that one. Yeah. Otherwise, you can find me over on shadowmain.com, shadomain.com. We are a TTRPG website where we publish TTRPG content 5 days a week, but I don't do it all by myself.
Keyword.
So it's all good.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me. It was lovely chatting with you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And good luck with all your future plans.
Thanks. You guys can find me still at Beholder to No One on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all that jazz. It'll become a network of sorts. I'm still working out the ideas and concepts for that. And keep an eye on the Twitter for news of what is to come. I will also release hopefully a episode next week or within the next couple of weeks that will give you more official answers than what I gave, because currently at this moment, I don't know the answers yet. I will still be, can still be found though on Tuesdays and Fridays on 2000 Tales. Last week was the season finale of Mask game, so currently we are on a hiatus, and I am not playing, I don't think, on the Tuesday game for the next couple of weeks, but I will be on the Friday game in our Monster of the Week game, which is on the end of season 4 and getting real good. My goth character got all of her memories back and is now very sad. But you should check that out on 2000 Tales on YouTube and Twitch. 2000 Tales Roleplaying, I should say, on YouTube and Twitch. Link is also in the description down below. And if you want to hear my beautiful voice or acting skills or whatever you want to call it, there is a ton of places you can find me, and you can find that all on my Discord server in the links section or on my website, nikkiyager.com, because I have a fancy website made by Potato on the internet, _Potato_. You should check her out. She's amazing, and hire her for work because she makes amazing websites and also does amazing stuff, graphic designs and stuff. But that's all we have for you today. Keep being awesome. I can't say we'll see you next time, but I'll see you in the next adventure. Bye. Hey, before you go, I just wanted to let you know that this episode was edited by Matt over at Walsh Animation. They are part of the Table Party podcast, and I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to them, especially because Matt has been such a freaking lifesaver when it comes to editing the discussion episodes recently. So please listen to this ad for Table Party podcast and go check them out and make sure you give them some love. Thanks.
What makes Table Party different from other tabletop podcasts?
The music.
The setting.
The characters.
The gore.
A bunch of different games.
The refreshing coldness of ice cream.
The 300-foot-tall squid named Delilah.
The dice rolls.
The horrifying body horror.
The aroma.
The suffering of my players.
Dairy Queen blizzards.
The luxurious plush texture.
The free coupons.
Bad decisions.
And who can we expect?
I'm Kelsey.
I'm Matt.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Walsh.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to the Table Party.
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 Welcome to the Table Party.